For the invitation, I'm really enjoying the symposium. And as Sylvia said, it's remarkable to see things going from ants over bees, other invertebrates, rodents, and now I'm going to talk about monkeys. If I get this, ooh, I need to have an adapter actually. So I will talk about some work we have been doing in non-human primates. Yesterday I was told, actually, and I know I'm sort of like at the risk of offending some of you, that this is a fine man trying to do or doing a very good job. I was actually more puzzled by the fact that this guy is eating sausages, whooshed, and that he is also an expert in beers, not something you really expect for a leader of France. You would expect sort of like drinking wine and more distinguished meals. But anyway, I want to point to this beer drinking habit of your president. We can all become experts in beer drinking. Actually, if you're practicing enough, if you train enough, and you do it over and over again, you will be able to distinguish seemingly similar types of beer quite easily. These very nice beers that we brew a little bit north of here. Obviously, this would be a very interesting kind of stimulus to use in a laboratory, and actually bees are also doing perceptual learning kind of experiments, or you can train bees to do these things. You can do that with humans, you can do that with primates. This doesn't work in a lab, definitely not with young students. You can do one experiment, two experiments, and then it's over. So we usually use very boring stimuli in the lab, like this, and as in the bee experiments, different colors, also different gratings. And you present them to subjects, human or non-human primate subjects, and when you start doing that, for example, you ask a subject to fixate and you present the simple grating in the periphery, and you ask them to tell them what's the orientation relative to a reference orientation. Subjects are initially pretty bad. They say they can only distinguish about 6 degrees from an arbitrary reference orientation. However, if you do that many, many times in a row, you ask them several times in a row what the orientation is, you see that they are getting better until they're reaching a particular plateau. If you then move the stimulus to different locations in the visible field, so you keep fixating there and you move that stimulus, you see that subjects have to start all over again every time that this grating is moved. Not all the way up from pre-training levels. There is some degree of a transition from the one to the other location, but you see that you need to retrain the animal. Oh, sorry, the human subject. In fact, you can do exactly the same in animals, for example, a non-human primate, so let them fixate, present a stimulus, and you see that they are also learning this task, this difficult task, as function of sessions, and they're getting also pretty good, sometimes even better at the end than a human subject. Same thing when you move this stimulus to another location, monkeys need to be retrained, but they're also getting better again. Basically, the other thing is that when you get into monkeys and you measure in visual cortex neurons that are sort of like responding to this stimuli, you also see that by training, these properties of these neurons change. This is data from a blue and a red monkey that was trained for disorientation and disorientation, a blue monkey that was trained for disorientation and disorientation, and you see that after training in a specific area of the brain, infratemporal cortex, posterior infratemporal cortex, that indeed there is a training effect. The trained the responses for the trained orientations are better than for untrained orientations, as you can see here. So we know that basically whenever you practice a lot, when you really train a lot, that this leads to behavioral improvements called perceptual learning, exactly as what we heard this morning with the bee experiments. And that also something changes at neuronal level. What we do not know, however, is in primates at least, what it is that causes these changes. Yeah, we can measure them. There is a correlation between neuronal changes and perceptual changes, but we do not know what it is that causes these neuronal changes, which probably are linked to the behavioral changes. What we do know is that attention is most likely very important. You have to attend to the stimuli to get better. If you don't attend to the stimuli, it's much harder. Although there are some counterexamples, and these are dubbed like task irrelevant perceptual learning. I will come to that later. We also know that rewards, this can be any kind of reward, this can be like primary rewards, secondary rewards, internally driven rewards, are probably also quite important. Rewards, why rewards, is that shown? Yes, actually, in the laboratory of Takeo Watanabe, they did experiments with human subjects who were asked to fixate to a screen, again a screen, and they were presented with, you see, maybe not in the back, a very faint grating pattern in the center, very low salient type of stimulus, and they were asked to do the same thing as what I showed you before, to detect the orientation of that grating. Now the trick that they basically did is presenting these low salient stimuli in one eye and having a very colorful stimulus in the other eye. When you do that, basically you're projecting two different stimuli to the visual system, independent in the two eyes, then your percept is dominated by this very strong, very salient stimulus. You basically are not aware of that other weak stimulus. And when you do that, and you can then actually present different types of stimuli, for example, a counterclockwise tilted grating in one eye, the other clockwise tilted grating in the other eye, and so forth and so forth. And you reward, you basically give rewards, just like in a lot of animal experiments, a little bit of juice in human subjects that are that not have been drinking over the past couple of years, hours, they are thirsty, basically. You can sort of like reward one of the stimuli and not the other ones, yeah? And when you do that, when he did that, basically, he saw that the blue curve is a performance of the orientation detection task in function of SNR prior this reward experiment, and the red is after the experiment, and then he observed that basically for the trained orientation, for example, this orientation presented in the left eye, that you get a benefit. Not for the other orientation in the same eye, not for the untrained eye, yeah? Which basically means that you can get like perceptual learning effects basically based upon rewards without or in the absence of conscious perception of these subjects. At least that's what they are claiming. So, and also, this also suggests that something is happening probably relatively in the early parts of the visual system, because there the channels from the two eyes are still segregated. You have like orientation selective cells and so forth, which you do have much less higher up in the visual system. How can you sort of like explain that? There are some models basically that marry this attention with reward processing to explain perceptual learning effects. Whenever you attend to something, somewhere in the brain a signal is being sent, this is the front of the brain, to sensory cortex, in this case visual cortex, and basically attention selects what needs to be learned. And then you have also a reinforcing, this rewarding signal, which is sort of like broadcasted mainly from neuromodulatory systems that send widespread, diffuse signals throughout the brain without a lot of specificity. Well, let's consider a task where you have to attend to something, to a color, for example, and that every other stimulus attribute is irrelevant. So only the thing that is relevant for your behavior is the color. Whatever orientation, motion, whatever is going on is irrelevant. So you're attending to the stimuli, and these stimuli or stimulus attributes are represented in visual cortex. And we know from a lot of studies, basically, whenever you attend to the relevant stimulus, that basically that representation is enhanced relative to the rest. Yeah. And whatever is not attended is basically slightly suppressed. Signals from frontal brain parts, parietal brain parts, even subcortical parts of the brain do this happen. right? Then you have a reinforcing signal, you're doing well. For example, a pilot, a Formula One pilot who has to start very quickly whenever the line turns or changes color. Everything is irrelevant except that color, so he really has to react very quickly. He gets sort of like a rewarding signal, and then the theory, again it's theory, says that you get plasticity at where this neuromodulatory system or signal basically interacts with the part that is being attended and not with the part that is not being attended. So you need to have like a combination of an attention signal and a reinforcement signal to get plasticity to drive perceptual learning. So this is a very nice theory, very little evidence, of not to say no evidence in primates. So to test that, we first had to get to a method that we can reward without attracting attention. This is very difficult because usually whatever you attracts your attention is rewarding, and whatever is rewarding also attracts your attention. Yeah. So these are two different things that can be separated, but it's very, very difficult. To do that, we basically developed a method to stimulate part of the ventral midbrain, the ventral tegmental area, and there are dopaminergic neurons. And we knew from rodent studies, basically, when you stimulate them, that these can result in a reinforcing effect. In monkeys, this was not shown yet, at least causally. So basically what we did, we stuck an electrode there, and then we stimulated small electrical pulses, basically, and we had the monkeys perform a free viewing task. I will explain you that. We trained monkeys to fixate, and then we gave, basically, so this is sort of like where he's looking at in green, and then we gave two stimuli, and he had to select freely which of these stimuli do you like. Which one would you think that he likes? The banana, that's also what we thought. So we asked him, basically, to make a saccade to one of these stimuli, and then he was rewarded in 50% of the cases, but it was not dependent on the type of stimulus nor the direction of the saccadic eye movement. It was simply to motivate the monkey to make an eye movement, otherwise they basically don't do nothing anymore after a while. Yeah, and then he was rewarded. And then you basically can measure, if you do that many, many times, you can measure the preference of the animal for a particular stimulus, yeah? So basically, when we did that, to our surprise, this is an index for snake preference, banana preference in this specific experiment. Minus one means like, okay, the monkey went always to the snake, and then the banana one, when it's one, he always went for the banana, and this monkey actually preferred the snake, probably because this is sort of like a more colorful, interesting kind of object. The trick that we then did is like once we sort of like determined the choice of the animal, we stimulated the ventral tegmental area in the non-preferred, or in the trials when he went for the non-preferred stimulus. So in 20% of the cases, he still selected the banana, and these were paired with VTA stimulus. And we saw very quickly that actually he changed his behavior from preferring snakes, he all of a sudden went to bananas. Then you can do the same trick once he is here. He's preferring now more banana than snakes. We could basically reverse that behavior. So this really tells us that whenever you stimulate VTA, that it is reinforcing that you can very quickly change the preference of an animal. Quite important, because then we can stimulate VTA, we can have like a reinforcing signal, and the monkey even doesn't know. You don't have to give juice, you don't have to give water, food, or whatever, to reward the animal. So with this technology in hand, we asked the question whether stimulation of the VTA would, whether with that technique we can cause plasticity in visual cortex, sort of like more or less the same what we saw earlier on, and whether this also could have an effect on the behavior of the animals, like getting perceptual-like behavioral effects in the absence of attention. So we want to get rid of a pure selective attention effect. How do we do that? We train monkeys to fixate again, and we have them do a difficult task somewhere in the visible field. The monkey had to discriminate between two different colors, here bluish and reddish. This is to make it easy. In reality, it was much more difficult than that. So the performance for that color detection task was about at 80% correct. So in reality, you see, you barely see the difference. So the monkeys are really good in making this difference. Meanwhile, we present stimuli of interest in another place of the visible field. For example, low salient stimuli, gratings, for example, of low contrast, not really very visible. So the monkey was fixating, he is doing the test, he has to simply press a button left, right for blue or red stimulus there. And then as readout, as functional readout, we use MRI scanning. So we put these monkeys in an MRI scanner and we do like an fMRI experiment. As quite a lot of human experimentalists do, like Stan de Hane uses it all the time to scan human subjects. We do the same thing with monkeys. We put them in a scanner and then we can collect fMRI data. Yeah, we can sort of like look at hemodynamic responses throughout the brain while these monkeys are doing these tasks. So what are we doing? What is the experimental paradigm? We have first an assessment of the activity for stimuli prior sort of like intervening with these VTA stimulations, yeah? So we basically map the representation of the stimuli. Then offline, outside the scanner, we pair one of the stimuli with VTA stimulation. Again, in all these conditions, the monkeys are, or the attention of the monkeys is drawn away from the stimulus of our interest. And then, again, in the third phase of the experiment, we do exactly the same as here. And then the idea, of course, is like, does the representation of the stimuli change, or do they change because of this intervening phase? Yeah. And then we use these electrodes to stimulate. They are chronically implanted in the ventral tegmental layer. This is how it is really looking at. This is the fixation point. The monkey is doing the color test there. Is it red or is it blue? And then you see this very faint stimulus in another part of the visible field. And then basically in this case, it's tilted like this. You have like not only in the right visible field, but we also put them in the left visible field. And again, counterclockwise and clockwise oriented grading. So basically you end up with five conditions, two orientations, clockwise and counterclockwise, oriented from vertical, and two visible fields, left and right visible field. And also for fMRI, it's easy to have like a null condition where there is no stimulus of interest. So we do that in the scanner and we map the representation of all these stimuli. Then the critical thing is that one of these stimuli is paired with VTA stimulation. Everything else is the same. Again, the monkey is doing this control, orthogonal control task. And then again, we do exactly the same as here. Key thing is, do the fMRI patterns in this stage differ from the fMRI patterns in that stage? Only because if we induce somewhere along the lines this microstimulation part of the experiment. So we have a trained orientation, we have an untrained orientation, we have a trained visual field and an untrained visual field. You can look at all these different manipulations. So basically at the end of the day, you're looking at fMRI activity between the post-VTA zapping phase, the post-association phase, and the pre-VTA zapping phase. Simply, it's exactly the same experiment. The only difference is that we did this in between. Yeah. And you can look at increased decreased activity. So basically, to make a long story short, this is the map in the control visual field that was not trained. Trained is the zapping. I use training for VTA stimulation. Nothing happens. This is the back. This is a flattened representation of visual cortex, early visual cortex, later visual cortex, infratemporal, where object representations are represented, and nothing changes basically. In the trained visual field, we see exactly at locations where the stimulus was represented, a change in representation induced by this very selective stimulation, VTA stimulation in between. When you look in more detail and you sort of like sample the voxels there, that part of the cortex in posterior infratemporal cortex, you see that indeed in both area V4, visual area V4, and posterior infratemporal cortex, basically that if you compare pre versus post activity, that it increases in one monkey, basically these beta values, as well in a second monkey. So you basically get like increased activity for the stimulated stimulus. You also see that the number of voxels basically increase. So the number of voxels that are representing the trained orientation increase between the post and the pre-association phase. We did something, so basically what it tells you is that the representation of the stimulus that was paired with VTA stimulus basically enhanced, and that for the untrained orientation, it that representation became worse. We also did a sort of like more sophisticated analysis relying on the pattern of activity in these regions, not necessarily the activity levels, but the pattern of activity. And we asked a machine learning algorithm basically to dissociate between different orientations. We had like four gratings, whether they could dissociate these four different stimuli prior the VTA stimulation phase, that middle phase of the experiment, and we could not change it, but this would be very unlikely. But after association, you see that the algorithm was better in dissociating basically the zapped orientation compared to the other orientations and locations of the stimuli. So it's not only the activity level, but also the pattern of activity in these regions that have been changed due to the changed signals from VTA. You can do that at whole brain, sort of like scanning the whole brain with this like machine learning techniques, and then you see that indeed in that part of the cortex you can get a positive effect. So the classification for the stimulus that was paired with stimulation became better. So the classification accuracy increased while nothing happened with the non-stimulated stimuli. So something is happening. So basically, whenever the monkey is attending somewhere, we can change representations, visual representation, by pushing this button in the VTA, where presumptively we are hitting at least part of the dopaminergic neurons. But does this have a behavioral effect? Does this also translate in a behavioral effect? To ask that question or to address that question, basically, we did a behavioral experiment, not in a magnet, but we asked now monkeys to fixate, and actually we asked them that they, or we presented them with a dot pattern, all little dots that were moving in a particular direction, and we asked them in which directions are these dots moving. You can make it difficult by having only a part of the dots moving in that direction. So you basically have either all dots moving in a particular direction, and you can add noise in that stimulus until, you know, only a very, very small fraction of dots are moving in a particular direction. Yeah, and the monkey simply had to say, is it going up or down? Then you can do the same trick. You can do the same trick. You have the monkey do the orthogonal orientation test, and then the monkey is doing the test either with the left stimulus or a right stimulus, and one direction of motion was paired with zapping this ventral midbrain region, the VTA. And then again, exactly as in the functional experiment, you basically assess again the behavior of the animal after this training period, training again, VTA zapping period that just appeared before this assessment, this behavioral assessment. So again, very important, during this phase, the monkey was doing this very difficult orthogonal color test. So he is not attending to this, to these gratings. This is how it is really looking at. So the monkey is fixating. This is the color dot. So the color change, the monkey has to say red or blue with the hands. And then during, there were two stimuli. One is 0% coherence, which means that all the dots are moving randomly in any kind of direction. There is no motion direction information, and the only 2% of the dots were moving in one particular direction, and that was then paired with VTA stimulation. So this is a very, very, very weak motion signal that was paired with stimulation, and the monkey was basically doing in meanwhile this orthogonal task. So no way that the monkey could detect basically that very weak motion signal. This is a movie of how it really looks like. I hope it, whoops, I'm not sure it's gonna, ah yeah. So the monkey fixates here. This is the dot pattern. This is the color task. Oops. Okay. Oh no. Well, basically, you barely gonna see anything in this movie because like it's just a flickering pattern. Anyway, it's the same paradigm as what I showed you with the gratings in the fMRI experiment. So the monkey is fixating and we have a pattern on the left or the right, and they're either going up or down, and you're sort of like manipulating the coherence of moving dots in a particular direction. 0% means like no motion information, it's only noise. 50%, there is a lot of 50% of the dots are moving in that direction. It's easy, yeah? And then you do again this second phase, and you stimulate only one stimulus, for example, left-hand side moving up, and you don't stimulate the other stimuli, yeah? So these are shown an equal number of times, only this one is being stimulated. And then again, you test for your behavior. So you get sort of like pre and post behavioral assessment, and in the middle, again, this training procedure, this VTA zapping procedure for one of the four stimuli, while the monkey's attention was drawn away from our stimulus of interest. So basically, that's a performance of the monkey prior to this VTA stimulation period or epoch of the experiment. So the monkey is, of course, getting better. This is percent correct answers of the monkey as function of difficulty. It's easy when a lot of dots are moving in that direction, of course. When there is 0% motion coherence, the monkey cannot know in which direction the stimulus is going. And you see this for the left and the right, over the untrained and the trained visual field, prior stimulation. And there's a little bit of a difference. Everybody has a bias, is doing a little bit better on one side than the other side. Yeah. So basically, whenever you subtract these two stimuli, you can sort of like account for training. This experiment also lasts sometimes, so you basically take one hemisphere, or one visual field, the data from one visual field into account, so everything is trained equally well. And because of the bias, when you subtract them, you see a curve like this, so negative values basically mean that the monkey has initially a slight preference for one particular visual field. So this is pre-zapping data. After zapping, you see for stimuli, very weak stimuli, you see this improvement in perception. There's a green line. The difference between blue is pre, green is post VTA zapping. So this is a difference in behavior induced by this zapping. This is for one animal, the same thing that you see for weak stimuli. Other monkey, same thing. If you pull that data basically for the weak stimuli, you see this very significant effect induced by stimulating VTA. I want to emphasize the monkey is attending to this color thing. It's a very weak stimulus. It's only 2% of the dots are moving in that direction, and still you get sort of like afterwards this pretty profound behavioral effect. This is percent accuracy. The same holds true when you measure sensitivity for the stimulus. So between pre and post zapping, you see that the sensitivity for the trained stimulus improves and decreases actually for the untrained stimulus. Bias, not going into detail, also changes. So basically, to conclude this, we can say from this experiment for the very first time that there is a causal relationship between stimulation of this ventral midbrain structure and plasticity in cortical representations. And so basically you get an enhanced representation of the stimulus that was paired with VTA stimulation. And also changes in perceptual abilities. You get an improved discrimination basically of a feature, in this case, direction of motion that was paired with VTA stimulation while controlling for spatial attention. So basically, the model that I explained to you before does not hold true entirely. You do not need to have this attention signal on board. You can get plasticity basically just with a reward-only signal. This doesn't mean that attention does not play a role. We have also done experiments where you have like both attention and this sort of like reinforcing VTA signal on board, and then the effects become even much, much more stronger. And this, of course, reflects the real world. As a side note, so we find these effects in very similar regions that are also showing fMRI effects when the monkey is really doing a perceptual learning effect, when it's really doing a real perceptual learning experiment without stimulation of the VTA, in very similar regions, as you can see here. It also fits very well with data, I think very, very lovely data from a lab in Boston from Mars Livingstone, who showed plasticity in monkeys, in young monkeys that were trained with novel symbols, that they were never exposed before with these symbols. And she did also fMRI, just as I showed you here. And she basically contrasted representations of these symbols before and after training, and remarkably, in very similar regions where we find this a part of plasticity, she also found these representations for trained novel symbols. So it might be, but this is hypothetical, that that part of the cortex is more prone to plasticity, maybe because of like more preferential input from these ventral midbrain regions that we have been stimulating. So that's all I want to say. And I definitely want to thank the one guy who did all the work and who is also an expert in perceptual learning with beers. Thank you. I'm happy to take any questions.